Welcome to Central Line, Leadership in Healthcare, the show that shares stories, experiences, and advice from notable and innovative leaders in healthcare. Leading in healthcare is incredibly challenging. So if you are looking to learn firsthand from nurses, physicians, administrators, and other healthcare professionals in leadership and management roles, this is the podcast for you. Hosted by Leah Wuchik, leadership development expert, executive coach, healthcare professional, and president and co-founder of Tall Trees Leadership. We talk with today's successful healthcare leaders on how they get to where they are, lessons learned along the way, and what it takes to thrive as a successful leader in healthcare. Let's get started with your host, Leah Wuchik.
Dr. Kathleen Ross is a family physician in Coquitlam and New Westminster, British Columbia. She does clinical work in community primary care and obstetrics and surgical assist work in cardiovascular surgery at Royal Columbian Hospital. She is a wife and mother of two. She holds a Master's of Science in Pathology and an MD from the University of British Columbia and teaches in the UBC Department of Medicine undergraduate and postgraduate programs. Numerous leadership roles have provided Dr. Ross the opportunity to establish healthcare policy and lead grassroots improvement in both community and acute care services, including past president of Doctors of BC, founding member and chair of the Fraser Northwest Division of Family Practice, Royal Columbian Hospital's Collaborative Services Council, and Fraser Northwest Division of Family Practice's Shared Care Committee, and president of the Royal Columbian Hospital Medical Staff. Volunteerism is important to Dr. Ross. She has twice been recognized by Rotary International District 5050 for her healthcare educational training project work in remote Andean regions of Peru. She is a board member of the Rotary World Help and the chair of the International Affairs Committee chair for Rotary Club of Coquitlam. Dr. Ross works to awaken girls to the possibilities and empower them via Girl Guides of Canada. In recognition of her long-standing community and international service work, Dr. Ross was inducted to the Terry Fox Wall of Fame in Port Coquitlam in 2019. Welcome, Kathleen. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being with us here at Central Line Leadership in Healthcare. I know you're quite a busy individual, so I appreciate you taking the time to chat with us and to share some of your wisdom.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Wonderful. So maybe to get us started, if you can share what you do and what does a day in your life look like?
I'm actually the president of the Canadian Medical Association that represents the voice of physicians, residents, and medical students across Canada. And that's an elected role, which means I was nominated in my home province of BC, elected by my colleagues in British Columbia and confirmed in August of 2022. So I've been with the organization now for just over a year, but president for just over 3 months. And it's been a hectic ride. And, you know, every day is a little bit different. There's different aspects of advocacy that we need to push forward, meeting with members of the government, understanding members of the public's concern, and having an opportunity to try and bring it all together. But then in my other life, I'm a family physician. I work just outside of Vancouver in Coquitlam and New Westminster. And I have the great pleasure to be doing a number of baby deliveries in my career as part of an obstetrical call group. And for fun, I like to go and visit the Royal Columbian Hospital's open heart program and help in those surgeries. So this is a fairly wide scope of practice and just makes every day a little bit different.
It definitely is a fairly wide scope of practice. And from what I understand, that's maybe not typical of your physician colleagues. So I'm curious, how did that come about?
So I've always enjoyed having a diverse skill set, and I've been privileged to practice in an area where I can put that to good use. I started my clinical practice working in a small town in northern British Columbia called Fraser Lake. And that was, 2 mils of mine in a major highway, and I was the only doctor in town. So it was a great start to use a diverse set of skills. And my colleagues working in rural and isolated areas across Canada, of course, continued to utilize those skills every day. So when I returned to my home city of Port Coquitlam to establish a practice, it was a great opportunity to carve out what I wanted to do as far as those skills were and maintain them as best as I can and provided diverse services to the patients I serve.
I get the sense that you like to stay busy and you like to stay on the cutting edge of what's going on in medicine. Now, that's an assumption on my part based on the role you have with CMA, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, there's no question at all that I have a keen interest in addressing challenges when I see them. And most of the opportunities that I've had in leadership came with the development and advent of divisions of family practice in British Columbia. Although I had done some different committee work early on, often it felt as a family physician that you were the last person in the room to be consulted or even heard when we did speak up. And certainly early in practice, that was the case. So I've been able to kind of chip away as I've moved through my various leadership roles. As a family physician, you become fairly skilled in gathering information and making decisions independently and in rapid succession. So I would say that, one of my biggest learning challenges early on was to get good at holding space for the thought processes and contributions of diverse groups of healthcare leaders so that we could find common ground and move forward, but always looking for what's not working, how can we innovate, how can we improve the services better?
I'm intrigued by the comment you made about holding space. And you mentioned for a diverse group of practitioners, what does holding space look like for you?
So it's very easy for us to, understand that our perspective is important to us. But the leaders we value the most actually take time to listen to the voices and perspectives of others. Reflect and process on what they've heard. And I can assure you that it sometimes means opening yourself up to harsh criticisms or complaints. But this process forces us to refocus on someone else's perspectives alongside of our own, and perhaps uncover some of our own unconscious biases and really grow as leaders and hopefully contribute in a more meaningful and wholesome fashion to whatever the task at hand is.
It's an interesting comment about opening yourself up. And sometimes that does come with, as you said, some criticism or whatnot. It's really fundamental to leadership. So I'm curious to know, is leadership something that came quite naturally to you? Or do you feel that it's something you've had to work at?
So I think, physicians are natural born leaders. It kind of goes without saying that there's a great deal of competitiveness and hard work and dedication, a certain resiliency and a solid sense of curiosity to where we get to as clinicians. I will tell you that in my early leadership training, even as far back as high school, I kind of had the vision of leadership of, as taking charge or giving orders. And I've really learned through the years that true leadership's more about listening than speaking and having that ability to bring together, collaborate with others rather than just giving orders. Although I have to admit, still in many areas, that top down or giving a directive is still necessary. But, more than ever, I think truly, truly great leaders are those authentic, inquisitive, inclusive, and confident people that others want to actually engage with and follow along and really inspire a desire to step up, lean in, and contribute.
Who's been the most influential leader in your life?
Oh, there's been a long list. I've been very, very fortunate in my life. this is, you know, the list is long and certainly distinguished. But I would say that there's no question at all that the opportunity for me to learn and listen to other leaders throughout my career has been instrumental in me wanting to actually inspire and lift up others. As I said, most of my leadership skills were probably acquired outside of direct medicine. I was involved in Girl Guides of Canada, in coaching and various kinds, and as a dance teacher, certainly involved with my kids at their school and the Parent Teacher Association. These are all areas that I certainly learned how to listen to others and learn from diverse perspectives and try to move forward as a collaborative rather than as an individual. Dictating orders, but those are all opportunities outside of medicine. And then inside of medicine, finding mentors that are experienced in primary care and system reform and quality improvement, even the day-to-day running of an office. I started with two slightly more experienced physicians who were really able to guide my practice and how I established myself in clinical care. So the list is long and distinguished.
That's wonderful. And I really love that you brought forward the leadership lessons that you learned from outside clinical practice or medicine. The fact that you were part of Girl Guides of Canada and, you know, active with your children's school. I often hear people commenting on not having the skills they need for leadership because they haven't had a formal leadership role in healthcare. And when you dig below the surface, you learn that they've actually had extensive leadership experience through these other mechanisms or these other places or formats. And I think sometimes we don't acknowledge the value of those opportunities as much as we should.
No, I agree completely. And, you know, normally when I speak to medical learners and residents about leadership, I focus in on my three key tenets. And the first one is to know yourself authentically. You know, what are you good at? Where would you like to develop new skills and an understanding of how you position yourself in the world? But there's no question at all, this self-doubt and imposter syndrome absolutely play a role in limiting the willingness of some of us to step forward. But, you know, I really encourage people to lean in early in their career and start building opportunities from which they can learn and grow and whatever makes sense in their individual life circumstances. And it's going to be different for everyone. And in some cases, you're going to cut your teeth on leadership in areas that are not directly in your area of career. Of course, my second tenet is to not go alone, and that means building networks of colleagues and ultimately mentors and sponsors that make your leadership journey easier. And that may be finding like-minded individuals to share your ideas, exploring the ideas of others who have opposing views, and all of these build our capacity to have important and difficult conversations. But the last and probably most important tenet that I share is finding your passion. Because, you know, it's pretty easy to understand that no two people are going to be the same, and our interests and experiences are going to vary widely, and collectively we're the stronger for that diversity. You know, confidently advocating for and leading change can be a dauntingly slow process. And if the topic's not of you know, somewhat interest to you, it's pretty easy to burn out, leave work undone, lessons and opportunities lost. But the other end of that is to just recognize that there is such a thing as a passion trap, where you get too narrowed down, too focused, too far down the rabbit hole to really affect change. So keeping that big picture view as much as possible and really building that understanding of your relationship with the world around you.
Those three tenets are so key to individuals being able to step forward as leaders. And I want to dig into them a little bit deeper. Your first one there about knowing yourself authentically. I'm curious, how did you do that? How did you learn about yourself?
In many ways, trial and error. You try.
Yeah.
You have a. You have a. You think you're really good at something. It's like, I actually think I'm really good at skiing until you go off a cliff. But I think that there's, you know, there's opportunities as we live and grow, to really understand yourself as a person, how you interact with people, how you handle difficult circumstances, how you learn, what interests you the most when you go to learn, and how do you reflect on where your gaps are? How good are you at taking feedback and instruction from others and open to that possibility of growth? And that means you need to recognize that you're not the, you know, starting from the pinnacle. There's always going to be pitfalls, and it's a little like climbing up the edge of a mountain that was previously a volcano. You take two steps forward and slide one back.
What was your hardest lesson?
My hardest lesson in leadership came fairly early in my medical career. I was part of a committee at our local tertiary care hospital that helped to guide the transition to the Canadian Blood Services from the Canadian Red Cross. And boy, that committee did a lot of work and a lot of background information and research to understand what were best practices. And I presented that to the medical staff, which at the time was largely older, largely male physicians, who were really not happy to hear from a junior colleague about a change in practice or protocol that directly impacted how they were going to work.
Right.
And I think I learned fairly early on there that did need to come, you know, as part of a collective, having heard those voices and perspectives before trying to present a solution that was a baked cake.
That's such an interesting story, and I can definitely sense the lessons that you took from that. When you are working with newer leaders and they are faced with similar tough lessons, what advice would you give them on how to pick themselves back up and keep going?
I think in every experience that you have that doesn't go the way that you expected it to go, and that can be positive or negative, to give yourself time and space for those aha moments, to take a step back and have a look at what went well, and if things didn't go well, why did they not go well? And rather than continuing to be negative, to actually look positively forward as to what you would do differently or better next time. Who would you need to consult with first, or share what your intentions were first, to see if you can, you know, be better prepared for circumstances that you might not have all of the information for leaning in? And that's going to be really important for future leaders, because our world is so dynamic right now. Things are happening at such a rapid pace. It's a little bit ridiculous to me to think that, you know, the ChatGPT is really only launched end of November a year ago.
Wow.
It has transformed our world and will continue to transform our world. So having that self-kindness, that ability to reflect and learn when things go both well and perhaps less well than you had anticipated.
And you mentioned about seeking help from others. And I think that's a beautiful segue into your second tenet about don't go it alone. One of the questions I hear all the time from leaders in all different stages of their career is, how do I find someone to be my mentor? How do I find people to surround myself with to support me? What would you say?
Well, mentors certainly come in all shapes and stages, and they do encourage learners to be aware. I typically would ask you to have a look at who's in your life that's at their career point where you want to be. You know, what have they attained? How did they get there? And what would you hope to do in your career trajectory to get where you want to be? And honestly, if there's someone you want to learn from, ask.
Yeah.
You know, ask specifically about their journey and their learning points, and whether or not they'd be willing to speak to you more on an ongoing basis. Mentors can really help us understand gaps in our knowledge or experience and guide us through the, you know, methods or processes to learn more. And you may not have the same mentor forever. You may have a mentor in one particular aspect of your life, and then move on to a different mentor, depending on what your outcome was. But the ability to circle back to someone who's known you over a longer period of time, that's working in a similar area or followed a similar career path, is extremely helpful. But you have to have the courage to actually ask. And as someone who's asked often for their insight and advice on how to move forward with various projects or career paths, it's something that we feel good about. We get to give back. But sponsors are something a little bit different, and we should probably touch on those, where mentors can help you be ready for when opportunities present themselves. Sponsors, who may still be the same person, but they're somewhat different, they actually nominate you or at times push you towards new opportunities. They open the door. And in our life and our career, we actually do need, we need both. We need those that can help us determine where we need to develop skills, and those that are willing to say, you know, this is something that I think you should actually consider applying for, moving into.
I appreciate that you brought forward the distinction between a mentor and a sponsor, and the fact that we do need both. And I think one of the things that stood out to me regarding what you were saying is having the courage to ask. One thing I've certainly experienced in my own life is that, generally speaking, people are very gracious with supporting others and being willing to share their knowledge, share their expertise, share their journey. I mean, this podcast is just one example of that. So if somebody was struggling with the ask, struggling with finding that courage, what advice would you share?
So if there's someone that you're not confident that you want to just go and speak to, then maybe not something quite so formal. Look at a hallway conversation, look at attending, you know, a session that's being presented by someone that you admire or someone that's leading into that same career trajectory that you're looking at. You can be a little bit more subtle to cross paths and gradually build it, but it is a relationship. So it is something that you would start the same way you start any other relationship. Be clear at the outset what it is that you're asking for and what you're hoping to get out of that relationship. And if the answer to that is I'm not able to take that on at the time, then that's fine. But at least asking. So it's the starting of the relationship in the same way you would start any other relationship.
Mm-hmm. I think that's good advice, because I think it takes the pressure off and helps people to recognize that it is a relationship, and people know how to do that. That, you know, everyone has many types of relationships in their life. And as you mentioned, just start kind of even informally as well.
Mm-hmm. And of course, I always say that the possibility of failure is 100% if you don't try.
Absolutely. Yeah. So let's go to your third tenet about finding your passion. And you mentioned about a passion trap. I haven't heard that term before, so I'd love it if you could share a little more about how do you know if you're in a passion trap?
Well, that's a really great question. I'll admit that sometimes it is challenging to find your passion, something that you're super interested in achieving, you know, but I always encourage people to step up, lean in, speak up wherever an opportunity occurs. You don't need to commit, you know, forever to grow. The analogy I usually use is pushing a boulder a short way up the hill and then handing it off to another boulder pusher is still going to get that boulder pushed up the hill.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone is in the same space in their particular life journey. So participating in whatever way makes sense to you. When you find that you focus all of your energies into one particular task and really feel like you're continuing to put forward the same points again and again and again, and the response is that you're not being heard, taking a step back and trying to speak to others with similar mindsets helps you to identify whether or not you're in that trap. One of the things that can happen when you're so dialed in and focused on one particular area and you're beating the person across from you with the same idea again and again and again, and the response seems to be defensive or they're throwing their arms up, there's a pretty good sign there that perhaps you're actually stuck in in a space and need to take a different tact or tacit. But being able to scope out and scope in simultaneously helps to avoid that. Where does my particular passion piece that I know needs to change fit in the broader spectrum? Now, in healthcare, that's not linear. A doesn't necessarily lead to B, leads to C, leads to D, because there are multiple planes, and there's very little that we can change in healthcare that doesn't require change in another area. Mm-hmm. So understanding what's the bigger landscape helps to avoid that trap. But I've seen people advocate for the same one small piece without understanding that bigger picture for years, and getting frustrated and burned out with trying to make that happen without actually understanding where that fits in the greater scope of the system that they're trying to change.
Mm. I imagine that would be a very frustrating place to be.
And I think that, you know, we wind up with people understanding that they can't continue to do what they're doing without getting some positive results. And don't forget that, I mean, we're absolutely our own worst critics, and sometimes we can be completely unforgiving. So having that little bit of kindness to ourselves allows us, or gives us permission, to step back and say, why is this not working? Is there something about the way I'm approaching this that's causing the challenge? And certainly, you know, self-doubt used correctly would help us to grow through experiences that challenge us. But self-doubt can actually also really hold us back, especially if it's supported by external criticism that reinforces those self-doubts. So absolutely, being able to be honest in our self-appraisals and, you know, in the words of Star Wars, avoid the dark side. I think it's critically important.
Yeah. So I'm interested, how did you go about discovering your passion?
So I have a serial leadership addiction and a serial passion addiction. So for myself, it's always about trying to improve patient care and the system that we work in. And thankfully, we've been able to initiate some changes and lead some changes. And then there's been some things that I've had to step back and hand off to others. And I think it's always a good plan to have an exit strategy. So to make sure that you've thought ahead, how would this particular entity, this particular project, this particular change survive if I was to step off of it immediately? And if you're leading a change initiative, that if something happened to you, that change initiative would fail, then you're probably going about it incorrectly. Mm-hmm. I think that we need to ensure that things that we lean into, things that we're passionate about, we bring along others with us. And quite honestly, others will sense your passion, or you're able to empower people to lean in whatever way makes sense to them if they can feel your passion.
What strikes me about that, and it relates to some of your earlier comments as well, is coming back to that idea of being able to see the bigger picture. You know, you talked about bringing people along with your passion and the infectious nature of passion, and thinking about, if I were to move away from this, how would this work carry on? Gets me wondering about what change, or what project or initiative that you've worked on, what are you most proud of?
I would say that, again, the list is long. There's lots of things that I could be that I could be very proud of. I would say that the Divisions of Family Practice in British Columbia was an initiative that I think many of us can be proud of, and being a part of that grassroots startup to empower the voices of physicians and patients in healthcare reform at a grassroots level was immensely powerful. Out of that came an information management and referral resource in British Columbia called Pathways that was such a team effort, and physicians from across the province were able to provide insights as to what they needed to help improve their clinical practice at a very grassroots level. Some of that was patient information, some of it was, you know, access to health authority programs or resources, referral processes, understanding who's providing what services in your area, whether they were community-based resources or clinical services. That was a true work of love on behalf of many physicians in British Columbia. Mm-hmm. And now that service is extended to the Yukon and just underway in Newfoundland and Labrador. So these are resources that physicians use every day to make the boat go a bit faster and to understand where they can refer patients to the most applicable resource in real time. And it made a significant difference to both patients and providers. So I'm also proud of that.
That's amazing. And I love that you referenced it as a bit of a labor of love, and to see it grow beyond BC, as you mentioned, into the Yukon and Newfoundland and Labrador. I would imagine really is fulfilling for you.
Yeah, and for me personally, I'm very, very proud of all of the people that have contributed in such a huge way to make this project get off the ground. And again, it's a collaborative process. I'd have a tough time pointing to one particular individual that did all the work themselves. This is something that we've done together. And very similar, you know, to the early days of the pandemic, I was president of the Doctors of BC at the beginning of the pandemic. And it was really, really interesting to see the coming together of health leadership organizations, unions included in that, around a crisis. Mm-hmm. So health leadership from a provincial, national health authority level, departmental level, physicians leaning in, public health, all coming together behind a crisis. It was really quite phenomenal and cemented in my brain the power of collaboration and sharing information and design solutions in a way that I don't think we've really demonstrated in my career.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate that you bring the pandemic forward, because that is a sentiment that I hear a lot from all kinds of leaders and frontline staff as well. And to be clear, I also feel that frontline staff are leaders. But this idea that we can come together despite sometimes different disciplines or conflicting agendas or different perspectives, we can come together and get work done and get it done quickly and very effectively.
Yeah, and I think that's I don't want to say anything good came out of the pandemic, but certainly the pandemic exposed gaps in our previous way of working. Yeah. And absolutely, it exposed longstanding gaps and deficiencies in how we deliver care that are not because of the pandemic, but certainly more exposed from the pandemic. And this is, over the last three decades that I've been in clinical practice, we've certainly seen the erosion of access that we hear so much about in the media now. But the pandemic really taught us that if we break down those barriers, we break through those silos that I've started calling cylinders of excellence, and really collaborate and learn from each other's perspectives and different ways of seeing, we can innovate. And the pandemic showed us in living, breathing, real time that our behemoth of a healthcare system has the ability to be nimble. Mm-hmm. And it was nimble because of an increase in resources. It was nimble because of our willingness to come together as those leading from the front and those leading from the offices on the high towers to actually affect meaningful change in a way that we hadn't seen before.
So from your perspective, how do we keep that nimbleness and not revert back to old ways and styles of working?
I think it's really going to take that coming together of minds on an ongoing basis. So very recently, the Canadian Medical Association convened over 40 healthcare providers, and really it made a difference. Different healthcare organizations from across the country made a difference for us to sit and have a meaningful conversation about the what do we need from our healthcare system moving forward. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until the very last part of the very last day that anyone raised the question of the who. So it was a refreshing way to look at how we need to reform our healthcare system. What services do we need to provide in the next 10 years and 20 years, and break through those day-to-day differences in how we work to set the long game, set that North Star and move towards it. And it makes a difference, I think, if we can have a wholesome understanding of what we're aiming for and how do we work together to ensure that we can deliver a healthcare system that meets the needs of Canadians.
Absolutely. And so on that note, my final question is around what we need from our healthcare leaders to make that happen.
We need that open mindset, that collaborative mindset. Their healthcare challenges that we face are truly wicked problems. And to be a wicked problem, you know, it has to be very complicated. It is unfortunate that it means we don't always agree on the definition of the wicked problem.
Mm-hmm.
And because we can't always agree on the definition, we often don't agree on the solution. But if we can approach these wicked problems with that open mindset, with an understanding that we don't have all of the answers at the outset in that collaborative way, then we will get to where we need to be. But being able to incorporate and truly listen and listen in that appreciative inquiry way, so you can try to hear what people are saying from their particular mind view,
mm-hmm.
and then put it together in the bigger picture. I think these are ways that we can move forward. Our challenges in healthcare are so massive. No one jurisdiction, no one body is going to be able to solve these challenges on their own. And we need to work collaboratively and we need to work differently than we have been doing if we are expecting to truly reform the healthcare system so it's sustainable and meets the needs of all the Canadians.
Very well said. Thank you, Kathleen, for your time today and for sharing your experiences and your thoughts. I really appreciate you being here.
Oh, it's been a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us today at Central Line, Leadership in Healthcare. Also, if you liked what you heard, please head on over to Apple Podcasts to leave us a review. Be sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Also, if you'd like to learn more about our host, Leah Woodchick, check out TallTreesLeadership.com.